Blog Talk Radio.
We're a nation of haters under their control. Rise up everybody and burn down the system. Pay up the exit polls. Wake up the silence.
And welcome to the Star Chamber, to our newest episode. This is what I call our Christmas special tonight. And we're really looking forward to tonight's guests. We have John F. Allen, a rising voice in urban fantasy. And then all the way from the land down under, Australia, we have Jessica Lay, who will be joining us from Jess Resides Here, which is one of my favorite blogs and favorite people in the world. So this should be a very fun show tonight. And originally, I was going to be hosting the show solo tonight. So, but in the interest of not having you all feel like Santa Claus left coal in your stocking, we have the good grace that we have a guest co-host tonight, and I'd like to bring her aboard. It's actually kind of an encore because she was a guest on the show. Jory of Jory Loves a Story, who is with us tonight. Jory, you there?
Yes, I am. Happy Christmas, everyone. I'm thrilled to be here.
Yes, Merry Christmas to everybody, for sure. And we're definitely thrilled to have Jory aboard with us. And got a lot of cool stuff going on. First of all, in the Seven Star Press area of things, we have had a couple of new releases recently. One was with Eric Garrison, of course, Sinking Down, which is the second book in his Road Ghost trilogy, his paranormal urban fantasy series, and great cover art by Bonnie Wasson. You got pay close attention to the reflection on the cover. I think that's one of the coolest subtle touches on it. And then also, and I am thrilled about this because this goes back to some of the early stages of Seven Star Press, but Jackie Gamber has the third book in the Leland Dragon series out called Reclamation. And it's the follow-up to, of course, Sela and the first book, Red Heart. Actually, Red Heart, interestingly enough, is the book through which I met Jess, our second guest tonight. And but Reclamation is a fantastic YA fantasy novel, and definitely kind of wraps up what is, I think, an extremely strong trilogy. And I know that Jory, you've had some exposure to Jackie, both interviewing her and reviewing her.
Yes, I have, Mr. Zimmer, and one of the things that always struck me about her writing is how much heart and spirit she puts into her characters and into the building of her worlds. As soon as I got into Red Heart, I didn't really want to leave. I just felt so comfortable in that setting, and since she stitches so much intrigue and suspense into the backdrop, you're kind of just waiting for the next installment. So even though I haven't read book two, I was thrilled to celebrate the cover reveal for book three, which is Reclamation.
Yeah, I think the cover art is extremely strong, and one of the cool things was, I don't know if, you did see it. I put together a little collage of the three covers just so people could see how they all kind of mesh together, but yeah, and the interior illustrations on this one are fantastic. Once again, these were Matt Perry artwork. He does a lot of the Seven Star Press covers and interiors, and he's done some great ones along the way for Jackie. And I know you've had a peek at the interiors as well.
I have. Mr. Perry has a brilliant way of evoking the images that she writes into the visual realm of an illustration. He has a true knack for that. I think Seven Star Press is blessed with both Bonnie Watson and Matthew Perry in that regard.
Oh, definitely. And I also have to give a shout-out to our third and the newest of those three artists, but actually he's been with us just long enough that I would call him a veteran SSP artist, but Angar Adarasa, who did actually the cover art for John's novel that we're going to be covering tonight, The God Killers. And Angar also did covers for, like, Southern Haunts Anthology, Perfect Flaw. He's working up three just absolutely great covers for three brand-new anthologies that we just about have out, and I'll be covering those a little bit on the show, but Scott Sandridge was the editor on these three new anthologies, and we're just waiting on the final artwork, and then those will be ready to go. But Angar, yeah, he's another great talent and in the mix here. But I think we actually, it looks like John may be in queue here, Jory, so we might be able to bring aboard Mr. Allen just a hair early. What do you think?
I think that would be awesome. It's going to rock.
All right.
Hello.
John Allen, welcome to the Star Chamber. That sounds like you.
Yes,
that
welcome.
That is me. Thank you.
Hi,
thank
Mr.
you.
Allen.
Glad to be
it's
here.
Corey.
Hello. How
I'm
are
glad
you?
Glad to have you. I'm
thank
doing
you.
Great this Christmas.
And,
how are you?
And happy holidays and Merry Christmas to everyone.
Well, I know you've
I'm
had a day of fun and gifts and family stuff, because I know your little ones are probably all excited today, huh?
Yeah, my son was really excited. He's 9. My daughter's 20, so she had a good day too. She's going on a trip on Friday to North Carolina to visit her best friend. So they had a good Christmas.
That's always
very
an exciting
cool.
time to travel, be friends at the holidays.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, definitely. Yeah, she's really excited about the trip. She hasn't seen her friend in a while, and, she's thinking about moving there to North Carolina so that they can be roommates and she can go to school there. So maybe in May she may be leaving home and venturing out on her own, which is really exciting.
She's getting
yes,
away.
And how about you? Did you do all right this Christmas too?
I did. My wife and I exchanged a gift, and we were just more excited about having family together and just being together, knowing that our daughter is probably going to be moving away. This might be one of the last Christmases that we have where she's living with us. So that was a special high note. High point of the day. But had a good day. Yep.
Yeah, you kind of hit the target on a little Facebook post that I put up today right there, because it's like I like to say is Christmas is definitely not about stuff. And the spirit of giving and, that's reflected in presents is always a good thing, of course. Try and take away from that. But the best gifts in our lives are our family and friends. And especially that comes home on a day like Christmas, and that's the kind of gifts that we ultimately celebrate the most for sure. And I sure
did
with my sister
today. I
didn't
get to see your message on Facebook, but I completely agree with you. I grew up in a close knit family, and 11 Christmases ago, the rest of our immediate family had passed on. So this is our first Christmas celebrating with families without families, which is a beautiful testament in this country where all families that might have a smaller family now can get together with other families and have this combined community Christmas dinner, to where you're exchanging traditions and stories or just celebrating the joy of not being alone at the holidays.
Right. No, that's definitely a tough thing, and I mean that's why today I spent a lot of time with my sister, and families, that's where the strength is, and one thing I'd like to say is that with I have that feeling with Seven Star Press that our authors have definitely developed we've developed a very family kind of sense together, and that's one thing that I love about John is that you've been a great fit for our family at Seven Star Press. And this year has been an exciting one for you because this is actually the year that your debut novel, The God Killers, the first novel starring your great protagonist, Ivory Black, was released. So tell us a little bit, some of the audience may not know about your great work with The God Killers. So tell us a little bit about the book itself and your protagonist.
Well, basically, to give you kind of like a brief overview of the book and how it came to be, about 2 years ago, a little bit over 2 years ago, I came up with this idea about a strong female protagonist, and something about her just kind of stuck with me. And I started to do a little bit of research into my family tree, and I found some exciting things out about some ancestors of mine. And I started putting all this stuff together, and the character just started to speak to me. She started to develop and grow, and she was born out of that research. And so I wrote a short story for a college course in advanced fiction writing, and that was the first time anyone ever heard or read a story about Ivory. And it was a hit. It was a success with the people who read it. And that particular story is actually one chapter in the book. And it was something that, you know, that I'm really proud of because I was able to keep a lot of that short story in the novel. And to give you a little bit of history about Ivory, basically Ivory is a former art thief. She was at one time a professional art thief, but she has since reformed, and she owns one of the premier galleries, art galleries in Chicago. But she also sometimes hires herself out to retrieve stolen artwork. And she's hired to retrieve a pair of antique pistols, and when she does, she gets a lot more than what she bargained for. Several attempts are made on her life, and her life is even further complicated by the early prison release of her mentor and former lover. He wants to continue their relationship both on a personal and professional level, but Ivory is just not interested in that. She's moved on. So he decides that he's going to get revenge, and he steals some artwork from her former clients and frames her for it in an effort to discredit her as a reputable person and also to rebuild his criminal enterprise. The people that hired her turn out to be a government agent who is with a very clandestine organization. The pistols themselves are actually linked to her heritage, she also comes to the attention of the vampire lord of Chicago, which is where she's located, and she also comes to the attention of the enforcer of the local werewolf pack, and from there, things just kind of get explosive. She's got to try and regain her autonomy. She tried to clear her name. She wants to unlock the secrets that the pistols have to her past, and she's got to protect the lives of those who are closest to her who come into jeopardy because of these other forces that are trying to manipulate her. So her life is rapidly spiraling out of control, and she's got to hold on, and she may not survive. You know, I put that in in my little synopsis. She's headed for an explosive conclusion. She might not survive. So that pretty much sums up the novel and how it came to be.
Very nice. And why did you pick Chicago? I'm curious. As a main setting.
Well, there are three reasons. One, Chicago is a big city and has a grand history. I'm intimately familiar with the city because my brother lived there for a few years before he died, before he passed away about 14 years ago. And so I would make frequent trips up to see him. And I also, when I was dating my wife, you know, right before we got married, that was where we would go on weekend excursions and we would explore a town. And it was just, you know, there's a lot of fond memories there. It's bittersweet, but, you know, with my brother and everything. But I was intimately familiar with that city, and there's a lot of rich history there. And a lot of my relatives are from Illinois, too. So, you know, I've got a lot of people who are tied to Chicago and surrounding areas. So it just seemed like the perfect place to fit my story.
Well, Chicago is a very musical city, too, obviously, with a great blues tradition and whatnot. Is that the fuel behind what made you the big serenading star at book events and conventions?
Well,
you knew I'd ask you about that. You knew I'd hit you with that.
My brother was a performer in the family. You know, I'm more of the artistic guy. You know, you give me a keyboard, I'll concoct a story for you. You give me some pencils and a paper or a canvas and some paints, and I'll paint your picture, draw your picture. But I like to sing just to be funny. And ironically, one of my favorite music genres is jazz. And so, you know, Chicago has a really big jazz scene. It has a very, very extensive jazz and blues history. Some of the greats, you know, from Duke Ellington to Ella Fitzgerald and even just the sophisticated lady Billie Holiday, who are some of my favorites from old school jazz, have performed there in the Cotton Club. There's a very, very rich history there. There's a very rich history there. Also, I want to relate to the African American community because of the setting in Chicago where Ivory is. It's Bronzeville, and that's a predominantly African American little section of Chicago, and has a very rich history, and some of that history is even tied to my ancestors, I found out during my research. But as far as me singing, I like to have fun. You know, I emulate voices, so when I sing, I try to emulate voices, and, you know, it's just a really fun outlet for me. It's a very fun way to break the ice at a convention when, you know, you get people laughing, you get them feeling good, and you know, they see me, you know, performing some kind of breaking out into some kind of song or whatnot. You know, that's just me being goofy, but it's a good way to break the ice with people that you meet and have fun.
Oh, yeah, Jory, it was awesome. I got to tell you a real quick story, Jory. When I first met John, it was in person. It was at an author's fair at Frank Hall's bookstore, that book place up in Madison, Indiana. And I'll never forget, you know, I was like, who is this guy? He's off the hook. And, I mean, John was just singing his heart out. I was like, man, this guy is unique. So, yeah, he definitely made a big impression on me. And I remember him and Rodney Carlstrom, who's now one of our editors. It was just an absolute blast. And John can actually sing. I will admit he actually can carry a tune. So, Jory, hopefully at Imaginarium you'll get to hear him do this thing.
Oh, that would be lovely. I wanted to tell you, Mr. Allen, I have a Chicago connection myself. My mom was born and raised there on the South Side. And so I grew up with a whole history of Chicago from a resident. And my grandparents were there. My great-grandmother was there until she moved down to Florida. And so I have all this happy Chicago love throughout my whole life. But when you were talking about the jazz, my heart just warmed over because I love that particular era of history for music. There used to be a station here called the Music of Our Life. And when they took that off the air, I almost grieved because I just ached to hear that music more and more and more because it's timeless and it evokes emotion. And I don't know, I think anyone of any era or age that you're born can relate to something in those lyrics and into those songs and into those ballads.
Most definitely. And that you know, that's a great thing that you have that that connection to the city. The city in and of itself is a background character in the novel, and because it's such a rich history, and there's, and she's tied to it. But just on a side note, Ivory was not born in Chicago, but she spent a lot of her childhood visiting Chicago before she became a permanent resident. She was born in New Orleans, which ironically was where the pistols were that she had to retrieve. And there's a connection between New Orleans and Chicago that fit perfectly, too. In Bronxville,
another great city. I've been to New Orleans, but I haven't gone to Chicago yet. In New Orleans, I was there when I was too young to go into the clubs. But I remember walking up and down Bourbon Street with my parents, just listening to all the music filtering out because they didn't want me not to experience that live and in person. The only thing I regret is I didn't get to go on the cemetery tour. But one of our goals is to go to Chicago, especially now that I know about the Thorn Rooms at the Art Institute. There's a local event in my area, and there's a family that collects miniatures. And so I sort of got a precursor to what I'll find there. So you're bringing up a lot of happy memories for me and a lot of dreams that are still yet to come.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah, New Orleans, I have not been to New Orleans myself personally. I do have some friends who have been there and some relatives that have traveled down there. So I was doing some research for writing the scenes that take place in New Orleans. I got a lot of good, solid research material to put into the book.
Did they go before the storm or after? Because when I went originally, it was in the 90s, way before the hurricane hit. And then after the hurricane hit, I actually met people that survived the storm. So I have this very interesting connection to New Orleans. I know it before and after. And I have all these stories of the residents that fled and tried to rebuild their lives, as well as awaiting word about what was left behind. And I have, I also met, like, rescue crews and electrical people, and it's kind of impressive. I didn't realize that was all stitched into your story. So it's kind of interesting to see what led you to place New Orleans and Chicago in your story and bringing in my own, you know, experiences as well.
Yeah, the people I did that helped me with the research, some had been residents prior to Katrina, and some were residents after Katrina. And it was very important that I have a glimpse at both sides of that, because that storm changed a lot in terms of the way the city looked and some of the things and how people were feeling after the storm, how people were dealing with you know, how the storm changed their lives through the destruction and through the loss of loved ones. So that was definitely, and that actually plays, that storm and the aftermath plays an important role in the novel. And I don't want to give too much away for people who have not read it, but during her time in New Orleans when she's retrieving the pistol, there's a lot of history that's given into the background of the character and how much New Orleans is still a very big part of her as a character. And I also want to say the connection from Chicago to New Orleans is in the novel is food, because there is a Cajun restaurant called Fleur de Lis that actually is in Bronzeville in Chicago. And it is one of the few traditional New Orleans cuisine restaurants in the Midwest, and it is one of the most popular, and the food there is excellent. It's really to die for. So, you know,
I'll have to put that on my list before we go. I want to ask you a question.
Check it out.
What was the inspiration behind the title, and is that a clue to what's inside the novel, or is that alluding to a bigger picture?
That's a good question. I would have to say that's all of the above, actually. The name of the title is actually the name of the pistols that she retrieved. And not to give too much of the story away,
you don't have to say anymore. I had a feeling I tapped into something I probably couldn't ask.
Right. They are called the God Killers for a reason, and I would highly recommend that any of the listeners read the novel to find out exactly why. But I will say that when it comes to that particular title, since it focused on the pistols, her retrieving them and her having possession of them, how what the cost of her having possession of them is, that's why I titled the novel The God Killers. And yes, it alludes to a much bigger story as time progresses. Things that happen in Ivory's future, they're very much tied to the title.
I like it when authors have a lot of depth into their naming of their books, because it alludes that they're already aware of where the story is going to continue. My next question, if I can, I was wondering, you mentioned you used your genealogy as a source of inspiration. Did you have art thieves in your background, or did you have artists in your background that inspired you to take that angle in the storyline? Because I study genealogy myself, and you never know what you're going to uncover.
Yes, that's a very good question. The art is actually a byproduct of myself. I'm a visual artist. I've had commissioned work before. I'm a painter, and I'm a sketch artist, and I'm a cartoonist. And I've had some accolades with my art work outside of writing, and I studied art history and such in college, so there's a very strong art connection in me, and that was one of the reasons why I focused that as her career. Art thief was something that was adventurous. It was something that, you know, could tie my knowledge of art history into something that was exciting, but it also went deeper than
that. It's been a character arc?
I'm sorry?
I was going to say, you used it to spin a character arc?
Yes, and it goes a little bit deeper than just me and my appreciation for art and art history, but it also goes into the fact that she's a reformed art thief, so there's a sense of redemption, and it's something that she struggles with, and it's something that makes her human, and it's something that gives her qualities that that the readers and other people can relate to, and it gives her depth to the character, so she's not just one of these heroic figures you might see in movies or some other books that, you know, just happen to just fall into this life of adventure. She's trying to redeem herself. She has a lot of demons that she's wrestling with, and, you know, art is a part of her. It's part of who she is, and I just wanted that statement to be made in choosing her former profession and her current profession and how it leads her into the adventures that she has.
You wanted to keep her grounded so that her humanistic qualities could be universally known.
Correct. That's absolutely correct.
Hey, John, I got a surprise for you tonight here. Guess what?
Okay. What?
It looks like our friend from Down Under is successfully made it to the Star Chamber. So,
oh, wonderful.
I think let's use the... There we go.
Welcome,
there's
the
magic dream harp. We are bringing aboard right now, for the first time ever, onto the Star Chamber show, the Thunder from Down Under, the one and only Jessica Lay of Jess Resides Here, Queen of the Blogosphere. Hi, Jess. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm good, thank you. That's quite the introduction there. Thank you.
Hello.
Yeah, we pulled out the dream harp.
Quite the warm welcome.
But yeah,
thank you, Stephen. I hope I live up to it.
Well, John's on, and we've got Jory. And oh, yeah.
Hi, Jess. It's nice to talk to you.
Hello.
I know we've been interacting on Twitter.
Yes.
Yes, we have.
Yes, how are you doing?
Nice to chat.
Thank you. Are you doing good?
Very good, thank you. Merry Christmas, everyone. I know it's still the 25th over there, so Merry Christmas. It's already the 26th
oh,
over here,
you.
Though.
Merry Christmas to you, too. And can I just say
thank
I love
you.
Your
Merry
accent?
Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
Well, actually, it's so cool. Jess lives in the future, and she always gives me the results of sporting events before they happen. So, you know, I can go bet them in Las Vegas and win a lot of money. So it's we really appreciate that. But one question I did have for you, Jess, is the Australian Christmas, because rumor has it that the Australian Santa Claus arrives on a surfboard being pulled by 8 flying wombats, and instead of cookies and milk, the kids there leave out Vegemite and beer. Is that true? Or is well, tell us about
you're killing
the Australian
Christmas for you. Stephen has this wombat obsession, so I think this is Stephen's dream Christmas by the sound of it.
It sounds like it. He's killing me with laughter.
That'd be a bizarro novel for sure, but I had to get you at least one good Australian joke there.
Jess, to get things so you can talk about your blog, what got you started in book blogging?
Well, that's an interesting question. When I started my blog, it actually wasn't book-focused, but I've always been a big book lover. My mother is very fortunate for me that she's a big reader herself. She loves to read and introduced me to, obviously, the love of books. Always took me to libraries, let me pick whatever I wanted, and it just seemed a natural thing that I would share the things that I would enjoy so much.
Oh, you and I grew up a lot alike then. My mom is the one that introduced me to the love of reading, and I had a bit of a harder road, but libraries were always in my life, so I can relate to you on that one.
Yeah, absolutely. I was very fortunate. She'd take me, and anything that I wanted to read, it was, like, there and available for me. She very much encouraged that.
My mom always said there's one thing she'd always support. Well, two things, really, art and reading. So I always had a mixture of art and reading in my life, as well as science. I think when you come from a family that supports you, I think anything is possible.
Absolutely. It matters a lot. I mean, I love seeing how much she still enjoys it. I mean, she's obsessed with reading and beats me at reading right now. I'm in a little behind because I'm obsessed with work at the moment, and that's taken up a lot of my time. But she and I like to sit and talk about books all the time, so it's a natural thing for me to just share the books that I'm reading.
I feel the same. That's sort of how I started my blog as well. I was going to ask you, what are your favorite go-to genres or dimensions of literature? What's your favorite?
My tastes vary a great deal. I don't have any set genres that I focus on in particular, but lately, and the ones that I do tend to go back to a great deal usually are, I'm very big on literary fiction at the moment. I do enjoy horror, definitely. That's one of my favorites that I had growing up. Young adult sort of kind of sometimes, it depends, and my mother is obsessed with young adults, so I tend to listen to whatever it is that she's enjoying because she's focused on that. I do like bizarro, which is a genre that's very unique and not as well known, but I do enjoy it. It's quite bizarre and entertaining, so, and that's the reason why I usually read, for that entertainment, and it certainly has plenty of that in there. So, yeah, I like a lot of variety in my reading.
I think most readers would always say we're eclectic, but it's nice that you're shining a light on books and authors that others might not even be aware of, and then you can introduce them to someone new.
Absolutely. That's one of the best parts about having the blog is I get to share about books and authors that others might not have heard of, and that's one of the reasons why I enjoy visiting other blogs that focus on books as well. For that very reason, I've discovered authors that I never would have otherwise, so I'm very fortunate in that as well.
Well, that's how we actually met. I alluded to it briefly, but Jess and I actually met because of a situation like that, because you became aware of Red Heart, and it was through Jackie's book release that we, I believe, initially connected with you.
Yes, absolutely. That was the first book from FSP that I was offered to review, and I was very excited about that. Actually, the first publisher that contacted me and said, would you like to review for us, was Seven Star. So that meant a great deal, and I'm a huge fan of Jackie's, and I'm very much looking forward to the third one in the Leland Dragon series. That one's got me excited, and I've been pestering poor Stephen about that for a while now. I'm sure he can share about that.
Oh, you too? I've been doing that myself.
I'll leave him alone. Yes, it's fantastic. So, yeah, Jackie's wonderful, and I've had the pleasure of her tea tastings on my blog. So, yeah, it's great fun.
Yeah, I think I went
she pesters me more about
No, go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say that Jess probably pesters me a little bit more
about
writing bizarro fiction.
When the book cover reveal came out, because I got so excited and eager to read about the synopsis, and then my mind was just lit aflame with what was coming.
No, I'm excited about I mean, it's gonna be an exciting year. We've got quite a bit coming up here, and yeah, Jess, you're definitely gonna have your hands full with some good titles coming up here.
I'm glad to hear it. Always look forward to sharing about them too. So that's something good.
Now, one thing that I think is helpful for authors and is always to hear from book bloggers in regards of the big no-nos for authors and how they deal or approach a blogger or etiquette with a blogger and vice versa. What are, you know, the things, the right way to contact a blogger and deal with them and the right kind of etiquette. Could you comment just a little bit on that for some of the, you know, especially newer authors?
Sure, absolutely. So I think, one, making it as personal as possible. I mean, at least address the person by their name or blog title if their name specifically isn't mentioned on the blog. If someone is closed for reviews at the time, then don't go sending them and try and insist or push for someone to review something that they might have their hands full, either with a lot of reading or perhaps personally they have a lot on their hands. A lot of authors, unfortunately, I've had some that presume and don't wait for you to respond and just simply send you their books as well. I think it's simple politeness that you just wait and see if the person can even fit it in. I mean, I would love to take on all the books that are sent my way, but there's only so much time that I have available, and with work and personal things, it's just not always easy to fit it in. So simply be polite, and sometimes, unfortunately, the answer is going to be no, and as much as a blogger might hate to say that, but that unfortunately can be the case, in which case you should just take that no and go on to the next blogger. There are certainly lots of us out there.
That's true.
And how about the blogger community? Maybe comment a little bit about, you know, because I know there's a lot of interaction, and it's kind of a small world, so it's not a good idea to, for an author to really, you know, get up in arms about something, and, you know, because word travels fast.
Well, actually, it is a small community because we met through Seven Star Press. I can't remember what book was on tour, but that's how Jess and I hooked up with each other.
Very cool.
That's true. We do communicate with each other, and particularly, unfortunately, one of my friends recently reviewed a book, which I happen to be the one, and I feel quite bad about it, was the one who I just saw a link posted on Facebook, and I sent her the link because it was a zombie read, and I thought, hey, this might be of interest to you, and I just sent the link to her, nothing more. I didn't even say, hey, you should go read it, but she did, and she reviewed it, as we do. And it wasn't something that she was attacking or putting down in any way. She simply stated that she didn't enjoy it as much and why, and then she was attacked for that. So I think that's the main thing that's going around that I'm seeing that is an issue with the blogging world for reviewing books, is that we're even attacked simply for having an opinion that we didn't enjoy a book as much. And I don't think that's quite fair, since, again, the answer sometimes might simply be that we didn't enjoy something. And it's not me personally.
I know,
at
there's
all.
A lot of non-kosher things happening. I've been noticing it myself, with even other bloggers that I'm getting to know. And I think it's kind of disheartening when that's actually happening. But I think if we all stay strong and band together and keep the honesty in our reviews and in our approach, then somehow it's going to turn the tides.
I would certainly hope so. It makes no sense to me whatsoever, because it wasn't even a completely fair review. I read the review, so there was no reason whatsoever for the attack that became quite vicious and personal. I don't think that's at all fair, and that part of it is quite troublesome to me.
I couldn't agree more.
May I just say from a writer's standpoint that it is definitely not cool to attack someone because of their opinions on anything, especially as it regards to your work. I know that being a writer, our work is very personal to us. It's an extension of who we are, and it reveals a lot about us, through the written word. But we also have to take in consideration that people who review or blog about and give book reviews are people too, and they may or may not, like your work. I mean, we've all read some work by someone and we may not have taken to it or whatnot. It's nothing personal. And I have some advice for writers who may get an unfavorable review, and that's just to ignore it. Just simply to not respond, not to call the blogger or talk to them or ask them a bunch of questions about why they didn't like it or whatnot. Just simply let it ride, because at least you're getting honest feedback about your work, and you, as a writer, you want that. But you also have to have a thick skin and know that not everyone's going to like your work. Some people may not appreciate it for various reasons. They may just not take to it or the subject matter, and that's fine. And that is absolutely fine. And people, writers in general, need to make sure that they have a thick skin about those types of things.
Mr. Allen, you're exactly right.
Very well.
I actually – go ahead.
I was just going to say that was very well said. Completely agree with all of that, definitely. And I do understand that it's difficult to receive feedback that might not be along the lines of this was the best thing I've ever read. I do understand, definitely. But sometimes, again, that's the whole point. You put your work out there for review, then sometimes some people will say that they just simply did not enjoy it. And it isn't personal. It's just simply them stating their opinion on it and nothing more. It shouldn't be taken personal at all.
This is why when I do reviews on my blog, I always try to be honest about my reader's experience and how the words that are inside the story affected me or didn't affect me. I always lead with my heart and stay honest and true to that experience. And I always hope that what's reflected through that is how I saw the book as it unfolded. And some stories have really sunk into my heart, and others just didn't make that connection. So I completely agree with everything that's being said.
And one thing I always like to interject, and I think, John, I've talked to you about this before, is that when it comes to reviews and authors, I mean, it's like Crimson Heart just said in the chat room that authors need to have a thicker skin when it comes to reviews. I mean, you look at Neil Gaiman's books on Amazon, or you look at George R. R. Martin's books, and honestly, I mean, you're going to see and loads of reviews that are one-star reviews of these legendary authors. And if you read them, I mean, you'll see people saying it's the absolute worst book they've ever read in their entire life. And we're talking, people like Neil Gaiman, Patrick Rothfuss, or George R. R. Martin. And I think that gives you a real perspective on, the fact that it's, you're going to get a whole range of opinions when you're an author. Nobody, no matter how good or best-selling they are, is going to be unscathed. They're all going to have one-star reviews. They're all going to have five-star reviews. And so I think it's important for authors just to take it in stride and understand that, I think it's even suspect when I look on an Amazon page like a self-pubbed or indie author and you see, 80 five-star reviews and nothing else. And I mean, that to me, that's a red flag. I mean, because it's not, a natural distribution will show, some things in the other categories. And I don't know if you guys agree with that, but yeah, I think, you're always going to have a few people that are going to see a book differently.
I don't think the rating scale is an indication of a writer's merit of quality. I think a rating scale is highly fallible because it's one person's opinion. I think authors need to believe in their work and own it and promote it and stand behind their work, even if one person reads it and loves it and another person might be, well, I'm not sure, I wasn't sure about this part or that, and just always defend their work in a positive light and not let the negativity overtake them, because none of us can always meet like-minded people, but if we strive to find the middle ground with everyone, I think we're better off.
I agree.
Can anyone join
another
party?
Person? I was going to say, I think is that Michael West? Is that Michael West?
It is.
Oh, hi, Michael.
Oh, man.
Save me from the holiday cheer.
Merry Christmas, Michael.
I managed
I love
to sneak
tweets,
away.
By the way.
Oh, thank you. I managed to sneak away
I
from the family.
I keep replying to your tweets.
Oh.
And I'm the non-horror group.
Jess?
Hello?
Yes.
Jess?
Yes.
Oh, hello. I just wanted to say that it was good to, after all these years, finally hear your voice.
Exactly. I feel exactly the same way, yes. I've got into chat with a couple of SSP authors. You're not one of them, unfortunately. So definitely nice to have a voice to add to it.
Yes.
Is he one of the horror writers that you were alluding to earlier?
Yes,
Michael?
Absolutely. I'm a big fan of Michael's. I actually plan on reading Vampires Don't Sparkle next after my current read. So yes, definitely big fan of Michael's.
I had a feeling.
Well, that's cool, because that one's actually got one from R.J. Sullivan in it, and I'm in that one, too. So, yeah, you're going to get to visit the few of us on that one.
Very good.
What do you look for in a good horror story? What do you gravitate towards? What gets you excited?
Something that sticks with you. So even after you finished it, you're just sitting there going, oh, my God, terrified.
So you don't mind getting
those
scared?
Those are awesome. Well, I don't like the slasher kind of that they've got in movies. I like things like the creepiness that's an atmosphere that builds. I enjoy that.
Oh, you mean like Hitchcockian, Alfred Hitchcock?
I guess, yes, but I must say, though, I do enjoy Clive Barker a lot, so he's one that I enjoyed, which is one of the reasons why I read Stephen's read not too long ago with his very, very good little horror short stories that he had there in his collection, which I enjoyed very much. So, again, even in that same genre, I enjoy a little variety as well.
Well, thank you, Jess. Very cool. I'm still trying to get Michael to read it. I'm still trying.
Well, I know. It's next on my to read pile. But the problem that I have is that when I'm deep in writing a manuscript, I don't like to read anything, short stories or anything, because I don't want anything to bleed over.
Because you're in the mood.
No, I know, Mike.
I was just going to say he's with me.
I just want to give you trouble.
Want to get out of it.
Yeah.
What now?
No, he knows. I'm just giving him trouble. I just like to do that. But
yeah. Yeah. Well, hopefully, I know Jess has read and likes the Legacy of the Gods. So hopefully, she'll enjoy this next one when it finally gets done.
Sure, I'm looking forward.
Oh, it's progressing. Yeah, it's progressing. Yeah, Jess
is
going to hold a big release party in Australia, and she's going to get Airborne to headline just for all of us. It's going to be awesome.
Stephen has, this whole Jessica Australia theme park that he's got envisioned by the sound of it.
Ooh, a theme park. That's a cool idea.
Oh,
all right, all right.
Well, you know, Americans love Aussies.
I just like to have a convention in Australia to be part of.
I love that idea. Let's do that. That's something to aim for.
Is that breaking news? Can we say that Jessica is going to host a book convention in Melbourne now? Is that official?
We can make it happen. You guys show up, we will make it happen.
Well, now,
all right.
Hold
it
here.
Impossible.
Let's qualify this. Are those big bird-eating spiders in Melbourne?
None that I've met myself, so I would
hope
okay. not.
All right. Well, then we can do this.
Don't worry. There are like
what do you say, John?
But we'll make sure that they're not.
I'm down for a trip down under.
All right. Jory, you in?
I'm definitely in. I've loved Australia for my whole life. I used to have friends there, so I'm full of Aussie pride all the way.
Cool. All right, Jess, you got it.
Wait, we got to rehearse our Aussie, oi, oi, oi.
Oh, yes, you definitely have to get that down pat.
We'll work on it a little.
Oh.
Probably needs a bit
that
more.
What is that
so
in the background? Is that a bird?
Just then? Oh, not here. Not here.
No, my
yeah,
bird died, unfortunately. Yeah.
Oh.
It may be wild children or something running around.
That's probably on my end. That's probably on my end. I'm over to my extended family's house, and there are some children in the back room playing and being festive, you know.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
What are you all looking forward to in the new year? Any resolutions or hopes or anything you want to share with the audience?
To finish my next novel.
I would say the same. To finish my next novel and some other projects that I'm working on. And, you know, maybe you'll be seeing a little bit more of my artwork as well as my writing, too. So, you know, I'm going to put that
and
out
singing.
There, you know. Yeah,
are you
going to
have a gallery
and
show?
Probably won't. I'm not going to aspire quite that big in this year, but I do need to build up my body of work, and you will probably see some artwork on my blog, my sister blog, which is attached to my writing blog. You'll see some paintings coming out for me. You'll see some drawings and some comic strip art as well. So looking forward to that. Thank you.
And Jess, what about you?
To read and blog more, probably. That's always a good thing to aim for.
Zimmer, the ball
is
your part.
Me? Well, you know, I was going to say, yeah, Jess and I are going to start a wombat importation business so I can start to introduce them to the States as a top pet to have. But aside from that project, you know, and then this new Melbourne convention, you know, I'll have to say that my 2014 is going to be summed up in a blog post I'm going to do on my personal blog, and the title of it's going to be May It Be, and that's my slogan for 2014. And it's an awful lot to go into, so I won't be able to describe my goals for 2014, but the May It Be blog post and slogan are what cover it. So look out for that in my blog just shortly. It'll probably be up by the 30th.
I like that.
I
May It Be. I like that.
For me, it'll be Living Through Serenity and Serendipity.
Very cool. Well, yeah, because we don't have to. Yeah. But it should be a very active 2014 on all accounts, because I know that all of us here are going to definitely be hopping as far as projects go. Because, John's, you've got a slew coming up. Yeah, you might allude to a couple of your things, because you've got quite a bit on your map for 2014.
Yeah, I've got, you know, about a half dozen short stories, you know, that I've got that'll be coming out in 2014. And then I'll have the sequel to the God Killers, which is titled The Conclave, and that should be coming out this hopefully this summer of 2014. So I have that going on, and looking forward to a very productive year. Got a lot of stories that I've finished that I'm going to be polishing up and submitting out to actually Seven Stars. Got some stuff that's going on. I'm looking to put some of my novellas together and hopefully have a collection coming, you know, late summer, just in time for the big convention season. So I'm excited about that. So I've got a lot of stuff going on, and it's all good, and I'm looking forward to it. And stay tuned.
A lot of joy coming in your life.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
You bet. And how they get, how they find you, John? Give, make sure, let's make sure we give you a time to give some links out to you, and then you, Jess.
Okay. Okay. Well, I am. I take part in all forms of social media. The best way to get in contact with me and stay connected is through my website / blog, which is johnfallenwriter.com. That's johnfallenwriter.com. From there, you'll be able to access me by following me on Facebook, following me on Twitter, following me on LinkedIn, and also check out some of my artwork as well as my writing. So that's the place to be if you want to follow me and keep abreast of all that's going on. That's where you go.
And Jess, we're going to play the Dream Harp again for you. There it is.
Thank you.
There you go. And where can we find the magical Jess Resides Here?
Jess Resides Here is at frelathon.com. And then it links to all the other stuff, Twitter as well, which is at Frelathon, although your Frelathon is the Twitter handle. But, yeah, the blog will link to wherever it is that I happen to be lurking on the internet places, Pinterest and, let's see, Facebook and other places.
Awesome.
It was wonderful
awesome.
Getting to interact with both of you. I'm glad I could step in and pitch it.
Yeah, we Jory just came aboard just on short notice because we had one of our main host couldn't make it tonight at the last minute, so I thought I was going to be going solo, but I'm so glad that Jory and Michael even got to jump in here and join aboard the fun here, because this is our first, I think it's our first truly international shows tonight, right?
Yes,
it is, and it's the last of 2013.
Well,
it
yeah,
is.
It's kind of awesome.
Special.
Yeah,
fun journey too.
Well, it's been, I mean, I've had a blast, and it's been great to be on here, definitely, and to get to talk to everyone. So I appreciate this opportunity most definitely.
Well, I
no
just
problem.
Want to make sure. Oh, I just wanted to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy Boxer Day and a upcoming Happy and Safe New Year.
Thank you. Same to you.
And
may everyone have
guess
a
what?
Safe and healthy new year, and may all our hopes and our dreams come true.
I hope so. And, Jess, one of the cool things is that we're getting to end 2013 with you, and you'll never guess who we're starting 2014 with on our show next week. You're going to love it.
I believe it's the mysterious cabin goddess.
Yes, it is. Chris Morton.
There you go.
We are releasing the
That's
Kraken.
The way
we are. yeah, we're going to end.
She'll make sure of it.
I just figured out that we're going quite from north to south between Australia and Alaska. I mean, that's not too bad for a 1 week trip.
Well, we're trying to get
no,
the A's all in.
You covered most of the planet there.
The Star Chamber knows how to rock. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I have no idea what the blogosphere is going to, or the or it's going to be crazy show next week. Jess, you've got to, yeah, you definitely got to check back with us next week and maybe even call in and surprise her because she's the only guest on next week.
We're running out of time.
And absolutely, I will do.
Goodbye, everyone.
Well, thank you very much.
I had a lot of fun talking to you.
It's been great.
Goodbye,
everybody. Have a Merry Christmas.
Happy New Year.
Thanks, Jess.
Thank
you for listening.
Great to hear you, Jess.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.